This is Takeaway with John Hockenberry, coming to you today from WBFO in Buffalo, New York. Thank you for joining us from this city of hard steel, Great Lakes. Buffalo is America's suburb of Canada. That's right, it really is. Everyone here has dual nationality, right? I used to hitchhike to Buffalo as a teenager, and then I'd buy a Greyhound bus pass and go from Buffalo through Canada to Detroit. My adventure days, back when I was walking around. Now I'm just another New York City slicker visiting a community that's had a few golden ages, but looks to be making a turnaround here in this community, and more about that tomorrow on the show. But how do you signify Buffalo? I mean, I look for Buffalo songs and booster jingles, and they're all pretty dreadful. So at the risk of offending folks who are tired of just another New York Cityite defining Buffalo, I could only really justify this classic from the musical 42nd Street, but here goes. You know this one. To Niagara in the sleeper, there's no honeymoon, it's cheaper, and the train goes slow. Off, we're gonna shuffle, shuffle off to Buffalo. You know it, come on.
For a little silver quarter, we can have the Pullman Porter turn the lights down low. Oh, we're gonna shuffle, shuffle off to Buffalo.
Not so bad. But to the business at hand.
I will work with Congress to introduce the following broader legislative measures and fight for their passage within the first 100 days of my administration.
I've got to say, what does 100 days mean when evaluating a president? We've heard a lot about that 100 days. The Trump administration still has 4 days left on this 100-day ticket. How will Trump do compared with how the president has billed these first days of his administration? He said back in October, while on the campaign trail in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, that he'd clean up corruption and collusion in Washington, ways to protect American workers. He'd restore the Constitution. There'd be a middle-class tax relief and simplification act. He'd ditch Obamacare. It's not quite working out as planned. But the 100 days marker is not in the Constitution. Where did it come from? For that, we've got some historians. Julian Zelizer is a political historian at Princeton University. His latest book is The Fierce Urgency of Now. Lyndon Johnson, Congress and the Battle for the Great Society. And Alexis Coe is an author, historian, and host of the podcast Presidents Are People Too. She's currently working on a biography of George Washington and says there's a lot of history around the 100 days.
The 100 days came from FDR, 32nd president, who comes into office in 1933, and we're 4 years into a depression. Banks are failing. There are lines to withdraw money that's not there around the block. There's widespread loss of confidence in the American government. And so FDR comes into office and he starts just throwing things against the wall to see what sticks. And not everything does, but he has some real successes. Now, historians are still debating whether we can thank FDR or World War II, but he did bond with the nation in a way that was fairly unprecedented with his fireside chats and his speeches, not just people who came to his rallies, who registered online. So this idea of unity, which presidents since the very beginning, since George Washington, have been, you know, going for, he definitely established, and with good nature.
Julian Zelizer, we've seen down through history that big presidents will start a tradition that is very memorable, but then it gets repeated over and over again, and in some ways might become a little bit mindless. I think the State of the Union address was originally just a memo to Congress. It's anything but that now. Is the 100 days in danger of becoming this mindless ritual?
Well, it is a ritual. It's an artificial marker. FDR set the standard, and since then, every president has been measured against that. There's many presidents who don't have great first 100 days, but go on to be relatively or very significant presidents. Many legislative achievements come much later in a presidency. So someone like Bill Clinton didn't have a particularly memorable or successful first 100 days, but went on to win re-election, went on to be immensely popular, and certainly considered one of the most important Democrats of recent decades. And at the same time, I remember when I was writing about Jimmy Carter, it was striking at the end of his 100 days, the press was saying he was doing fantastic, that it was very successful, and he went on to be a one-term president. So it's both this ritual we keep doing, and I am not convinced it's the best way, really, to evaluate what's going to happen to a presidency. It just gives us an early feel for how the political style of a president will shake out and the relationship with Congress.
Donald Trump passed 28 laws as of day 90, executive orders 24, but approval rating is down in the 40s. President Obama passed 11 laws, 19 executive orders, 65% approval rating, which is pretty high. That's up in the Carter zone there at the end of the first 100 days. And he had a very, very hefty legislative success rate there in the first 100 days. Bill Clinton passed 24 laws, 13 executive orders, 55% was the approval rating. Alexis Coe, did these numbers evaluate the president, or is it more the president's ability to work with Congress? It's kind of an evaluation of the working quality of the government itself.
Right. And that's why FDR was so successful. And going back to what Julian was talking about, that this is this arbitrary number. The thing about it is, yes, FDR was the progenitor, and that made sense given the country he inherited. And we definitely have to remember that a lot of presidents inherited crises, including Obama, the greatest recession, FDR, you know, the Great Depression, Truman, the end of World War II, Ford, Watergate, you know, we can go on and on. But the thing that keeps the 100 days alive is the media. I mean, it's nice. It's a nice little soundbite. It is a nice organizing tool. But the thing that keeps it going is definitely the media. And I think a good indicator of the relationship between usually the president and the media as far as the 100 days is when George W. Bush invited the media on the 100th day to have lunch at the White House because he had not accomplished that much. And that's someone who, again, the presidency, the first 100 days didn't look like it was, going to be much. And then it really was. But that happened after the first 100 days.
What do you think, Alexis, Donald Trump will say about this 100 days?
They were fantastic. They were the best ever. The hyperbole will be incredible. But I mean, I would counter that the best 100 days ever were actually far before FDR, and it's anachronistic to even call them that. But I mean, George Washington's first 100 days were pretty incredible. He established the presidency.
And LBJ's first 100 days after the assassination of JFK, which is a different kind of measure, Julian, was also over the top.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the two big bills before he is reelected in 1964, the Civil Rights Act of 64, which is just, it's not just another bill, it's just not just another number of legislation. It's a signature achievement in race relations after Reconstruction. And he also pushes through a historic tax cut. And all of this is moving instantly. LBJ, he didn't believe in the 100 days, meaning that it's a finite period. But he did really believe that presidents just have a limited amount of time. He wasn't a believer, ironically, in presidential power. So for him, what this early window, whatever you wanted to call it, meant was this is the window before Congress really turns against you, even in a period of united government. So he moved on those two bills after his reelection in 1964. He does the same thing. He just floods Congress with ideas such as Medicare and Medicaid. He'll go with voting rights and education policy and much more. So he is more on the FDR side of the ledger, meaning a president who really pushes through transformative legislation. But look at the outcome. Again, he had very good 100 days, but he didn't have a very good end to the presidency. Big mistakes were made after the 100 days were over, and Vietnam is the name of that mistake.
There are some presidents who really blew it in the first 100 days, even though they weren't measuring what went on. I mean, Benjamin Harrison, of course, didn't make it to the 100 days.
Should have worn a coat.
Yeah, exactly. He died of pneumonia. Everybody knows that. Are you going to finish your book in 100 days?
Oh, I wish. No, it's due in January, thank goodness. I do think it's important to look at some of the failures that Trump has had in the first 100 days. And again, that can change. The Affordable Care Act, he vowed to repeal it and rewrite it, and that didn't even get to a final vote, but it seems like we haven't heard the last of that. There are still sub-cabinet positions to be appointed. There's no detailed budget proposal in. That's usually in by this time. You know, the immigration ban, he issued it, it was blocked, he rewrote it, it was blocked. We have to look at this, though, and say, like, right now, we know that he has the majority in both houses, and he still hasn't gotten a lot done.
Julian Zeller, your final thoughts?
Yeah, he hasn't gotten a lot of done. We've seen problems. But I would just say there are some ways in which he can say he's successful, kind of a blitz of executive power to deregulate industry, to deregulate energy markets. He's staffed his cabinets with people who are very aggressively going to try to undercut the programs they run. And finally, even though his national approval ratings are very bad, what he cares about is the base of support and feeding that kind of partisan anger in the electorate. And there his support remains quite strong.
Good points. I was also counting you. You did that in under 100 seconds. So Julian Zeller, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Julian Zeller is a political historian at Princeton University. His latest book is The Fierce Urgency of Now, Lyndon Johnson, Congress, and the Battle for the Great Society. Alexis Coe, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Author, historian, host of the podcast Presidents Are People Too. She's currently working on a biography of George Washington.
My pledge is that in the first 100 days of my administration,
today marks our 100th day of working together for the American people.
100 days since I took the oath of office.
What follows is my 100-day action plan to make America great again.
100 days, 100 nights, to know a man's heart.
So what could you accomplish in 100 days? The space station could do 1,600 orbits of the Earth in that time. A cow can produce 650 gallons of milk. Impressive. Alexis Coe could never finish her Washington biography in 100 days, she says. But Speedy Jack Kerouac could have written On the Road 3 times. Same with Anthony Burgess in A Clockwork Orange. Some of you kind of like this 100-day marker.
This is Pam Roberts from Brookline, Massachusetts. Right off the bat, a president sets the tone for his or her term. 100 days is ample, important time to establish how she or he will advance the causes of the people of this country and the world, as well as lay out a plan for the protection of our resources.
Hey, this is James from Anchorage, Alaska. People look for metrics, benchmarks, statistics, poll numbers. But how did that work for Hillary Rodham Clinton in the election? Days 101 through 2920 are just as important as days 1 through 100.
My name is Sherry. I'm calling from Queens, New York. I haven't necessarily thought the first 100 days were crucial, but this president has changed my way of thinking. With all the promises made and virtually nothing accomplished, I hope the president has realized just how over his head he is.
What do you think of the first 100 days? Good measure? Arbitrary measure? What's your policy priority in 100 days? Tell us at 877-8MY-TAKE or join the conversation on the Takeaways Facebook page.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.